to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, Brains.
Coming to you straight from San Diego, California, let's welcome our host, April Mahoney.
So Dr. Patricia Suggs.
Suggs,
Suggs. I can't get that right.
It's a different kind of name, yeah.
It's good. I reminded my Uggs because comfort, it reminds me of comfort. Suggs. It is so nice to have you here on the edge with me. You know, I'm going through a rough patch right now. Mama is 91, and it's not for jokes.
No.
It's some serious business, and I asked her the other day, I said, so how is it 90? And she says, miserable. She said, the only thing I had to look forward to now is a bowl of orange sherbet.
I love it.
You know, but again, I've had to have some complicated conversations. You know, I've had to talk to people about, you know, what to plan for palliative care. I've had to talk to people as to hospice care, you know, cremation. And she said, I don't know why you having all these meetings talking about me. She said, you could be talking about yourself.
She sounds great.
I love it. You know, but I know in my heart, I'm not going to cry no empty tears. Okay?
No.
I've been one hell of a daughter. My mother has lived with me and magnificent for over 30 years.
Wow.
You know, and it's been real cool. Everybody get along. Everybody got their own space. My daughter is here, you know, but it comes a time when that bell is going to ring and we're going to have to clock out.
Yeah, that's true.
And so, again, you're never prepared for that.
Mm-mm.
You're never prepared for that. And I'm not going to pretend like I'm going to just probably crawl under a rock. But just like I told you, just like when a baby comes into the world, you don't know what to expect.
Mm-mm.
And when we transition to the next place, we're not going to know what to expect. So I am greeted with jubilation, because that's what my word tells me. I am going to find joy. I have no regrets. You know, I've said what I've said. I did what I did. She said what she said. We've forgiven each other, you know, and just live our life. So I'm trying to prepare myself for that. And that's what you did. For a long time, you work with people, you know, that help them work with seniors.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to hear all about your story, but please include that. Tell my Brains a little bit about you. Oh, Brains, I forgot to tell you. You're back at home. You are at the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Where's that? On the edge. Welcome.
On the edge. I like it. Yeah, just to share too, my mother died a couple of years ago, and she was 95.
Oh, wow.
And it was, she was an amazing woman, you know, right up until the end. And you're right. You don't really know when, you don't know when it's going to happen. They thought she was going to die a couple of times over the last 3 years of her life. And she bounced right back. She's really a strong constitution, that one had. My story is, it's not a linear one. I've done a lot of different things. I went to seminary at Duke Divinity School. And then my husband's a minister too, that we met there. And then we took appointments. We were in the Methodist church. And so I served churches for a while, and he did too. And then I went back to school and got another master's and a PhD, and it was in gerontology. So I love working with older adults. And so I ended up going into, as part of my ministry, I became a faculty member in a medical school at Wake Forest University, and did a lot of workshops, working with health providers, teaching them how to work with older adults. That is different, you know, and it's not something you just take for granted. You don't treat them like a child. You know, they really have special needs that you need to be aware of. And that was fascinating. You know, it was amazing.
You gotta be respectful of that, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, my father is very independent. He lives alone in LA. My mother lives with me here in San Diego. And he's still spitting vinegar, you know?
Yeah.
What he wants, right. Don't want me too much in this business.
Mm-mm.
Wants me just close enough, you know, and when the time is right. But people don't understand when the time is right. Anything can happen at any given moment.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
You could call and then not even be because of your age or anything.
Oh,
I'm trying to work with him to just be a little bit more open and allow me to, you know, to interfere in his life a little bit more. And it's out of care. It's out of concern.
Well, yeah, because you don't want him to fall, or you don't want him to have those accidents. And you're right. It's not necessarily because of aging either. It can be a lot of different reasons. And so
young people slip and bust their noodle.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah.
Poisoning. It could be anything, but I just really want to, what do you think that is? Why do you think that older parents become so encaged in their way of thinking and they isolate their children? Is it that, are they afraid that their children are going to come in and take control? I don't understand. Where's that fear come from? Cause I don't want to experience that as I get older.
Yeah, I don't either. And I think part of it is the control factor, because they lose a lot of control as they get older. You know, more people are helping them, especially as they get sick. Cause my mom was independent right up till about 93. And then she just needed help with medicines. And then she got to where she couldn't walk and those kinds of issues. But they do become very fearful and can become very obstinate and very stubborn, because they don't want to lose total control. Which I don't blame them. I don't want to lose control either. I don't want people telling me what I do, when I do it, and all of that. So, you know, I think a lot of it, in fact, probably the biggest part is that. Just loss of not wanting to lose it. That's why a lot of them don't want to give up car keys. Yeah, things like that.
They don't want to give up car keys. They don't want to give up house keys. They don't want to give, you know, banking information. They don't. But you know what? To me, and it hurts as the child, because you feel that they don't trust you.
Yeah. Yeah, but I don't think it's that. I really think, some families don't trust each other. Well, you know, that's a whole other story.
They should.
That's a whole other issue. But for most, where you have a good relationship with your parents, it's just that they don't, it's not that they don't trust, it's that, my gosh, you mean I can't even handle that now?
Right.
You know, and some even in nursing homes have made, you know, there have been studies of residents and ask them questions. And one of the biggest thing is, shoot, I can't even control what I eat anymore, you know, in some way.
Right.
So it becomes very hard, and they become, cause my mother could get that. Oh, Betty, if she were, she could get very obstinate, very stubborn.
I know. My mother's like, I'm not doing it.
That's right.
And what am I supposed to do? But accept the fact that she says, and who's the mother?
That's right. That's right. That's mine too. Mine's put her finger in my nose, just whack, you know, took that finger and pointed it at me. And she said, now look, don't get into that. I mean, I was trying to tell her to do eye drops or something. And she goes, don't do that. Mm-mm. It's none of your business.
Right.
You just leave my eyes alone.
We've had that old adage, you know, once an adult, twice a child. But again, there's got to be respect. There's got to
right.
be boundaries. And so I don't push too hard. You know, my feelings have been hurt. You know, I've had to cry and say, you know, you don't trust me that, you know, I do everything for you, from wipe your tears to wipe your bottom. And, you know, there's certain things that you don't trust me with. Why? But again, like you said, it's a sense of independence, and people
it
want
is.
Independence.
And they
so
do.
I worked with healthcare professionals. Yesterday, I had a beautiful experience. I'm going to write a letter about. I was in the emergency room with mama, and the camaraderie among the emergency room staff was phenomenal.
Oh. That's great.
They ask each other, how you doing? How you feeling? Can I get you some coffee? Do you need help with this? Do you do that? And what that showed me is that if they care for one another, they have the capacity to really care for my mother.
Absolutely. And she's going to come first. Yeah.
She's going to come
first. Oh, that's so wonderful. Yeah.
It was wonderful. And so I told them, I said, I'm going to write a glowing letter because I want, and do a podcast on it, because I want people to know that even with all of this anxiety from COVID, and all this big kerfuffle that's going on in the world, that there are still decent, compassionate people that love, honor, and cherish. And you are one of those. So tell me a little bit about what you are doing now as a coach and as a publisher.
Yeah, I'm excited. Coaching, I work with high-achieving professional women who may feel overlooked, unnoticed, and they're not speaking out. And so I help them find their voice so they can speak out, you know, stand up to stand out is what I call it. So they can learn how to share their voice and share what, you know, their ideas and all of that. So, and get promotions, hopefully, and also be a respected colleague instead of just someone they constantly overlook. So that's my coaching. And I just started my own publishing company, PKS Publishing. And my first book is full. We launched it at the end of April, and it's called Aspire, Women Finding Their Purpose. And I am so excited.
Proud of you. I am so proud of you. I see you out there and you have the serious look on your face. It's like, we are about to do it. We are about
That's right.
And you say you coach women to show up and stand out.
That's right.
Showing up to show out.
Yes.
You know, and it's a big difference when it comes to that. But also, let's talk about this. You were a woman in a seminary school when that wasn't very popular.
Oh, yeah, it was like, yeah, it was in the 70s, 74 to 77. And yeah, there weren't any female faculty. There weren't the women. It was a very small group. They didn't even have most seminaries and Duke's one of them. They have a large women's department and all of that, but they didn't have any of that. So when I was there and my roommates and I, we were, you know, pretty much we were it. I mean, there were a few more, you know, there were several, but not as many as men, of course. And so we had to figure out our own way. I mean, we didn't have role models. Not men, you know, maybe we did, but I didn't know any. And so we had to just figure this out on our own. And when I went out, graduated and went into a church, they appoint you in the Methodist church. And so they had to do some finagling and convincing because congregations hadn't had women in our conference here. They hadn't had women either. And so they were like, not so sure. You know, in fact, I was told by one of the members after I'd been there for a while. So they were making it like a joke, but I know it was true. Made the statement, yeah, we figured when he came, the district superintendent came and told us, asked us, would we take a woman, you know, we figured the last minister who was male, he messed us up, but he didn't destroy us. So we figured you couldn't do any worse. So I'm like, well, thank you for that vote of confidence.
And how did you, you know, it's a little personal question, but how did you find time to find love, girl? Because I know they was watching you.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Big time. But it was good because in our first appointment, I had a parsonage and my husband had one and his was out all and kind of out in the rural area. And so we lived in that one,
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So now there are so many women in ministry, right?
Now,
and they hold a pivotal role. You know, they really do. Because they're being heard. And I'm going to say this for the first time. What would you say to a woman that is stepping into that role in these days and times in the 21st century?
I think what I would want them to know is that you just go in and you love the congregation. You love the people. Yes, you're going to have some. There'll be issues. No church does. I mean, every church has issues and it may be related to your being a woman. It may not, but you just go in and you love them and you minister to them and you allow, you listen to what they have to say, but you stand your ground, which a lot of times, even males have problems with that. Sometimes they don't stand their ground. And for a woman, it's essential. You've got to show that you know what you're doing because they don't think you do.
I like to ask my guests controversial questions, and the world has changed a lot since the 70s or 80s.
There's
a lot of same-sex marriages. There are a lot of gays that have come out. There's transgenders. There are, overlooked and underserved. We're still fighting that black-white issue.
Oh, Sally, yeah.
So, you know, the world has really changed. So the world of ministry, I think, should follow along those same lines. I mean, you're looking at, I look at the Pope, and he's trying to be a little bit more liberal as far as having women in the church.
Right.
You know, not saying too much about indiscretion that some of these priests have been through. Oh. But yeah. It has to be an ongoing conversation about what's real in the world today and not in the text. We follow the text, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
We interpret that for something that's applicable today.
Right. Because it's so many want to interpret it very much and very rigidly and very conservatively. And they want to, and literal, they want to say, okay, you can't do this. This is wrong. And we don't do that at all. There's been struggles in the Methodist Church actually, because, and it may split because of that issue, the homophobic kind of attitudes or feeling like it's, you know, my gosh, it's a sin. Da, 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 da. And I'm thinking, yeah, you know, how can you say God's creation's a sin? That just doesn't make sense to me. And, you know, in one of my little churches, we had a transgender teen and we had a gay couple. I mean, it was wonderful. I loved it. But that's not common, as common as I'd like it to be. I think
women are more progressive.
I think
because we are the conduit. We are the gift of life.
That makes a difference. And I think, you know, we have a nurturing that, I mean, men can be super nurturing. My husband's one, super nurturing, but it's different.
But
it's still different.
It's not the same.
Mm-mm.
You know, I talked to her about, you know, when my daughter was growing up, I talked to her about, you know, her period and dating and all that kind of stuff. And he looked at me like a side eye, like, that's your conversation. And I'm like, no, that's our conversation. You just have to use a different vocabulary. Just different,
that's right.
Words.
That's right.
That's how it is in the world. But you are now a wordsmith and you are helping people put together books.
Yeah, it's fun.
How'd you get into that?
It was funny because two, three years ago, I never would have thought of it. But when the opportunity arose to be go through a training where I understand, you know, we understand everything that you need to do and how to do it and all of that. I thought, golly, you know, I really want to impact women in the world, to really make a difference for women. And I thought, what better way than to put books out into the world? And I love to write. And so, yeah, it was fun.
Well, it looks like you love to read too. I'm looking at that bookshelf back there. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Okay. I was cleaning out my library because I'm trying to not become a minimalist, but I'm really trying to reduce my stuff.
I love
the books. There's nothing like a book. People say, I don't have a book. That doesn't do it for me. I need to come up with the book and have me something to drink and have a little snack and have the music on, burn an incense. It's got to be a whole experience.
Oh, yeah. And I want to hold it and smell it and turn the pages. Yeah.
And after you hold it and smell it, you put it on the shelf and don't touch it anymore.
That's correct.
So recycling books are very, very important. But when you work with these authors, and they contribute to your anthology. What is a little bit about, because I know that you're planting a seed, number one. You're not going to just pick anybody. They have to be vetted to be in this project. What are you looking for? We'll use this first because you're going to be ongoing. But what were you looking for in this first book?
Women that were, you know, following their purpose. They may not have, and I would tell them, you don't have to have found it. I just want your journey. And I wanted women who would be honest and authentic and tell their journey, tell the good stuff, the bad stuff, you know, and everything in between, and just explain how they worked through all of that. So that the women out there, you know, out in the world who read it, and we hope there'll be many, they can read it and go, oh, if she did it, maybe I can too, because I think there's lots of women that are still hiding their talents and their gifts and not really coming out. And the second book I'm doing, I got to tell you the title. I love the title for this one. Invisible No More, From the Darkness of Discrimination to the Light of Success, Women Speak Out.
Now, you know, you opening up Pandora's box, don't you?
Yeah.
Talking to a black woman from South Central LA, you open it up.
Yeah, you might want to be in this book. Okay, you might want to write. You might, yeah.
Because it's not about who I was, but it's who I evolved. And a lot of times when I talk to people, because I'm a storyteller as well, that's what podcasters do. I help you tell your
story.
And when people do it, the first thing I hear women say is they come out with the victim. Oh, I was sexually abused, or I was divorced, or I was, you know, beaten by my husband. That's not who you are. Okay.
That's not who you are. Not at all.
Who you are right now is important. And that
is
who you were, and that's made you the woman that you are today. So I'm really hoping that when women tell their story or when they introduce themselves, that don't come to me with that victim mode, because I'm not feeling sorry for you.
No.
No.
In fact, I've told them, I want them to write, when I was telling them, this is how, you know, a loose outline for the chapter, you tell us who are you now in the first part.
That's right.
You know, give yourself brag, give yourself credit, get, you know, take the credit and all of that. And then you get into the journey about how you got to where you are now.
Absolutely.
And then the last part, you give some helpful hints and tips.
Absolutely.
To other women who are facing it. So, yeah, I'm like you. I don't want to hear the victim part now, I, you know, maybe later, but I want to know who you are now.
Right. Because, I mean, to me, it's like, oh, okay. You know, it's like a Debbie Downer.
Yeah.
I want to celebrate you. I want to meet the person that you are today, the successful businesswoman, the coach, the mother, the doctor, the teacher, the preacher. That's who I want to meet. But I want to.
Yeah.
And then I want to go back and figure out how you progress and use some of those tools to build myself up.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, that's the way to do it.
That is amazing. Well, you have just been a breath of fresh air. And I think
you're so sweet.
I do.
Oh, this has been fun.
It has. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with my brains before we conclude? And I definitely want them to know how to get in contact with you, to follow you.
Oh, yeah.
And with regards to, you know, maybe getting involved in your next project, purchasing your upcoming project, because
we're
going to put it out there. We don't want to be an Amazon bestseller.
No.
We want to be a New York Times bestseller.
Yeah, that's right. We want to be. And so it goes on the Aspire goes to launch April 30th. And we are asking, and we'll be doing a lot on social media, to get people to on that day that come, go and buy the Kindle version. It'll be like 99 cents. So, and just buy the Kindles. And then it comes out as a paperback shortly after. And we will market that too. And then the next book, I think you'd be good in this next book.
You know, I'm thinking about it. I'm writing my own a book. It's 365 days. And what I'm doing is I'm writing my teachable moments, because if you follow my show, you'll see I do teachable moments. But what I learn every single day.
Yeah. Oh, I love that.
All the time. I learn something new every day. Well, I'm writing it down.
Yeah. I think it's great.
And so I'm going to do that. And, you know, I have another one, you know, big $25 words. Because people use these big $25 words, entrepreneur and coach and authentic and all that. But what does that really look like in the real world? You know, they just toss it out there, and that's not really what it is. So I'm coming up with some great stuff. So writing is in my future right now. Like I said, I'm just stepping back. I'm going to enjoy each moment with my mother.
Yeah,
I'm going to work
on favor those. work on your dad and savor the moments with your mom. That's what I did. You know, anything she wanted, anything she asked for.
Yep, that's what I told her. You know, she said, come pick me up right now, and I would like some fresh sherbet when I get there. And, you know, did you fluff my pillows? I said, yes, queen. Yes, queen. And so, you know, I appreciate all that, because it's going to be reciprocal. I know that I'm going to have a good relationship with my daughter.
Yeah.
And she will be there for me, because that generational trauma is a cold piece.
Oh, it is. It is. It really is. So that's it's great. Now we had just one child, a boy. And so his wife said, well, you know who'll be taking care of you. It'll probably be me. And I said, that's fine. She's great. But he's so compassionate. But men just don't think like women do.
No, they don't. Well, and I can say yes and I can say no, because my husband is a wonderful, I think she likes him maybe a little bit more than me. Because he's the the one that goes and gets the ice cream, you know?
Oh, well, hey, yeah, you know, the good stuff.
It's a lot of love there. And you can tell a lot about a man's character by the way he treats his mother.
Absolutely. And my husband's a great nurturer. I mean, he's, it really means a lot.
You know, because them in-laws, you know.
My husband was chaplain at the same continuum of care retirement facility that my mother was in, and his mother. Oh, both of them were there. Yeah.
Wow.
And my mom loved him to death. Yeah.
My mother loves him to death too. He's sadder about her not feeling well than me. You know, well, and I shouldn't say that, but it's just he lost his mom at a young age.
Yeah. And so
he was just 25. And again, my mother's lived with us 30 years. So he's been with my mother longer than he was with his own mother.
Well, that's right. Yeah. So she's more like his mom. Yeah.
She is. And so it's just a wonderful, wonderful mix. And I'm hoping that everyone that's under the sound of our voice finds some compassion. Find some compassion for yourself first.
Oh, absolutely. Love yourself. Yeah.
And understand that there is a greater good. There is a God of unconditional love, whoever you want to call it, under whatever doctrine. I don't have a problem with it, but you better.
Yeah. There is one. I believe that. You can call it whatever you want.
I know you ain't got to tell me. I'm a witness. I got a direct line, okay? Line never busy. Never busy. It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. And I'm so glad that there are women like you that are, you know, taking the gauntlet and running with it. And
I appreciate
being afraid to, you know, be a shining light for other women in their darkness. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you. You want my email address? I can give you my email.
We're going to do the email. And also at the end of the interview, I always
put good
in contact with you. So go and give them the email.
Okay. It's PK Suggs, SUGGS @gmail.com.
Okay. You got that? Suggs rhymes with
us. You did it. You did it.
I do. And thank you so much for being here on the air.
Oh, I've had fun. This has been great.
It's been great. Rains, go back and listen to other edgy conversations because, baby, I got them for you. Okay. I am on fire right now. I have done maybe almost 100 interviews already, and we are, yes, ma'am. I got 37 lined up, okay, from all over the world. And we talking to men, we talking to women, we got some young entrepreneurs, we've got the overlooked and underserved, and we got the rich and the wealthy. So whatever you need, we got it right here.
You got it.
I'm glad I got a hold of you. Talk to you.
Me too. You take care.
All right, baby.